Limits, did you like that song I just sang to you?
Yes, I can't keep track of all the songs. You make them up on the fly. You're really good. You're like a freestyle artist.
Yeah, Rounders was a great movie about gambling addiction. One of the greatest. If you want, is that a sports movie?
Is Die Hard a Christmas movie?
I think Cards and whatever you want to call it, not cards, gambling, poker, that type of thing. That's a sport, so it's got to be a sports movie. Donnie, do you agree with that?
Oh, I don't know. I do not know.
Is poker a sport, Donnie?
There are so many
of
these you can debate.
Is poker a sport, Donnie?
See, I don't think I would count it as one. I know we have the World Series of Poker, but I think there needs to be like a fine line at some point where we dictate what's a sport and what's not. Like, if you can leisurely do it and drink while you do it, I don't think it should count as one.
Yeah, I guess I kind of agree with that, but poker is on ESPN. I mean, is anything on ESPN a sport?
I mean,
clearly not.
I mean, do you count the hot dog eating contest?
If there was a movie about that, what's the guy's name? Who's the champion of
Joey
that?
Joey Chestnut, who I would consider, if we're counting it as a sport, one of the great athletes in American history. He's like a 17-time champion.
So if there was a story about Joey Chestnut, a movie about his life, is that a sports movie? I have to say yes, almost, even if I don't think that's a sport.
They do have a 30 for 30 on it.
Do they?
Yeah, there's a 30 for 30 on Chestnut and Kobayashi. They're big battles.
Donnie, football, famous for many reasons, one of which is the newly instituted Donnie Football Fridays. Every Friday he joins me for an entire show of football talk. All right, big boy. We never did the quiz show because of City Limits last week.
We did do one.
No, the week before, the Jets one.
Oh.
Remember?
Yes.
So I have a couple of trivia questions for you and Limits.
Oh, boy.
Including this, and I just stumbled into this. This might be the greatest Steeler trivia question of all time. I've checked it 100 times to make sure it's true. It's true. Yards per carry. Who is the Steelers' all-time leader in yards per carry with this qualifier? At least 100 attempts. It's an unbelievable answer. So 100 attempts minimum, the all-time Steelers leader in yards per carry. Anybody?
Is there a determined order here, or we just go?
Just go. Just fire out
answers. I have a guess.
I have a guess as well. I'm going to say it's not Franco, not the bus, or not Le'Veon Bell. I'm going to go Barry Foster.
Wrong.
Le'Veon Bell.
Wrong. I'm not even going to let you guess anymore. Cliff Stout. Is that the
quarterback
trivia answer or question of all time?
He had
100 carries, 100 attempts, and he averaged 5.5 yards on those attempts. I can't believe this, Donnie. It's Cliff Stout.
The man was an athlete.
Was he? I just can't believe it. Now, if we're talking like conventional running backs, or at least guys who had like, you know, a couple of thousand runs, then it's Cordell. Cordell's in there at 5.2. Not a couple thousand, you know what I mean? A couple of, you know, 400, 500, that type of thing. I can't believe that, Donnie, that it's Cliff Stout. I'm just in shock over this.
He would have been far down my list on guesses, like non-existent on the list.
Yeah, I agree. What'd you make of Deontay Johnson in Baltimore?
I'm surprised at the cost, or I guess the lack thereof. But there's also the report today. I don't know. I don't know if you guys talked about this. That was the best offer that Carolina received, what Baltimore put out there. Obviously, due to NFL rules, the Steelers were not allowed to make an offer for Deontay Johnson since they had just traded him last offseason. But I'm surprised that a player of his caliber could be had for such a small amount of draft capital. I understand that he's a free agent at the end of the season, but all it was a late-round pick swap. And I do think, I don't know if it elevates Baltimore to a Super Bowl team. I think that defense has a lot of issues, but it certainly didn't make them any worse.
No, I thought it absolutely made them better. It did. And I know I take shots at Deontay, you know, from time to time, like the plane from Carolina to Baltimore flew backwards, things like that, Donnie. But he's a good player. He is. I mean, he's got 30 catches for a crap team. He'd be leading Baltimore in receptions if he was there the whole year, I think. He's had some really good games after two slow ones, and then he got hurt. He's going to be productive. He's going to make plays for them. So it leads to this question. You guys had Patrick Peterson on the other day. I think Pony gave him a choice of a multitude of guys, and he took Adam Thielen. I agree with him. The only question is health. Is this guy ready to go? Do you like that idea? And if you don't, what's a better one?
Oh, I like Thielen a lot. I feel like he was a name that we brought up maybe last Friday, Joe. The injury is a concern. You can point to the age and say, well, the guy's in his mid-30s. Last season, you want to talk about production on a bad team. He was with Carolina last season, the worst team in football. He had maybe the worst quarterback in football, Bryce Young. The guy had over 100 receptions and over 1,000 yards. So if he is right, if he is healthy, I absolutely like the idea.
Me too, and for all the other reasons that Patrick Peterson mentioned. All right, Donnie, do you have the Steelers winning the AFC North at this point?
I think I would still go with Baltimore as of right now. Now, of course, what do I know? Preseason, I had Cincinnati, even though I don't think I was alone in that. Everybody said, oh, Joe Burrow's back. They'll figure it out. Cincinnati will look good. That certainly didn't look like a good pick. I think Baltimore ultimately will be the AFC North champ. But, I mean, if you can wager on the Steelers right now, maybe not the odds that they were last week, but I still think there's a lot of value there in going with them because it could come down to those matchups, those head-to-head matchups the Steelers and Ravens have. And we know for whatever reason, the Steelers seem to have the edge there against a two-time MVP and pretty even coaches, I would say. The Steelers always happen to have the edge because they have Lamar Jackson figured out. And John Harbaugh seems to try and outsmart himself when he coaches against Mike Tomlin. The last handful of times that the teams have matched up, Harbaugh has almost just tried way too hard, and I think that's hurt them a lot.
Fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. The fan text line, you can have a little conversation with the Limitless Wonder. Brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, personal injury law firm, where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. Donnie Football's on the Fan Hotline, presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. Donnie, I brought your name up earlier because I agreed with you. I think it was last Football Friday when you said the Browns become, I think, way more threatening without Deshaun Watson. And I could sense it just watching the game on TV the other day. Like some sort of cloud has been lifted there, and it feels like a new energy around the Browns. I'm not saying they're going to make some dramatic comeback and make the playoffs. They just become way more difficult to play against. I think you were onto something there, and I think it's about the collective energy in that locker room and in that city.
We don't get them all right. We don't even get many of them right, but we do get some of them right, and that was one for me that I could notch off. Not that I didn't even think that was too difficult to predict. I think a lot of people could see that coming. They had Deshaun Watson in at quarterback only because they were financially tied to do so. I think a lot of people in the building on that team, and certainly the fans, knew that there were better options behind him, and that better option was Jameis Winston. They made him inactive, Joe. They made him the emergency third quarterback for the game that Watson got hurt in, because every single home game in Cleveland this season, they have started chance for Jameis Winston in hopes that the front office would finally take Deshaun Watson out of the game. I said, and I don't feel bad saying it, given the player that it happened to, and also just the fact of the matter, that is the greatest injury in the history of the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, I mean, you could sense it. I think it's just a fact. Like, those guys jumped to his defense when people cheered that injury, and, you know, I feel like they feel like that's their duty. as teammates, but man, it's just, it's different. One of the most incredible stats is, what is it, 6 of the last 7 games without Watson, they've had a quarterback throw for 300 yards, 3 different guys, and he never did there.
Yep.
I mean, it's ridiculous. From one big boy to another, Mark Cabali was on a few minutes ago. Things got out of control momentarily, Donnie, but he did say he believes there's only a 7% chance that Najee will be back with the Steelers next season. What would you put that percent at?
Not much higher than where Mark is at. I don't know, maybe 10 to 15, because I do think he is playing maybe his best football of his entire career. And, you know, he's wise to know, his agent is wise to know that it's a prove-it year, it's a contract year, and either the Steelers will be flipping the bill for that or another NFL team. I just think we're in a different age of Steelers football, where if this was still Kevin Colbert as the team's general manager, not to take a shot at him, but he liked to do things a little bit old school. I think the fifth year option would have been exercised, and then they probably would have worked out a new deal with him. Now with a few different members of the front office, I think they're just going to let this play out. And, you know, Najee may finish with the best year that he's ever had. And, you know, that would be good for him. That would be good for the Steelers as well. But then I think they just part ways come season's end.
I'm going to turn you into Donnie Hockey before I let you go back to Mulsey in the bullpen. Jack St. Ivany is my new hero. He's a saint, all right. He's the patron saint of protecting Sidney Crosby, doing what nobody else seems to want to do around there and hasn't for years, other than like Geno or Letang or somebody outside the core, who actually, in this case, jumped off the bench like it was 1976 at a hockey game and attacked the guy who just got into it with Sid. I love this guy. He's my new Penguin hero. Did you see this, and what'd you think?
I did, and it's actually annoying to me, Joe, that there are so few guys that step in and do this stuff.
Yes.
Especially for a player like Sidney Crosby, because you know what we would be saying if this happened, let's say, in a Steelers context, or, you know, we could even go Pirates, or, you know, any big star in sports. If this thing happened consistently and the guy never really got stood up for besides his best friends on the team, we would start to wonder, like, what kind of guy the player is. Now, in this case, we know that Sidney Crosby is a, to use the word saint, a saint of the game. Like, he is maybe the most polished on and off the ice or field or court, whatever you want to say, of any athlete that the city has ever seen. So we know that there's no issue with the character and that the players wouldn't like him. But do you get what I'm saying there? Like, it's annoying to me that teams can constantly mess with the captain of the Pittsburgh Penguins, who has brought this city 3 Stanley Cups, and there never seems to be a huge jump for guys to step in their way. I mean,
yes.
My only other thought would be, does Sid tell these guys not to do that? Does he say, like, hey, I can fight my own battles? It's weird.
He shouldn't be fighting his own battles, which he's done for a lot of his career. It's what I opened with today. Guys like Bob Arey and Jay Caulfield from a few years ago basically saying, this was after Austin Watson cross-checked Sid in the spine and nobody did anything, saying, basically, what are you people doing in that locker room? Jay Caulfield saying, what are you going to do? This was 2 years ago. What are you going to do when you're in the locker room and you haven't avenged it at all? Ask Sid if he's okay? Like, that's been the theme over there, and it's embarrassing. And God bless Jack St. Ivany for doing what nobody else would. And he did it, like I said, in 1970s fashion by jumping off the bench. There were 6 guys on the ice. He's probably going to get in trouble by the league if he hasn't already today. And he did what needed to be done. You saw how the game changed. You talked about, you talk about shifting the energy over in Cleveland with the Browns and their fan base. Man, stuff like this shifts energy. And nobody's willing to do it, Donnie. I loved what, who was it the other day? Was it Jared Goff? They tried to hurt him. Who was it in the game where the offensive lineman then attacked the guy? Did you see that?
I didn't see this. I can't think of the game you're bringing up.
Did you see that, Wonder Twin? Somebody tried to twist up the quarterback's knee and an offensive lineman went absolutely crazy and attacked the guy.
No, but that, I mean, that plays into the Dan Campbell mentality and philosophy of that culture in Detroit. That's really not surprising, but in the same token, defending the quarterback is something that is always number one in the NFL. Why isn't it the same with Sidney Crosby? I don't get it.
All right. Well, thank you, Donnie. We appreciate your time. And you and I, in a mere 48 hours, even less than that, I believe it's closer to 44 hours, we'll be embarking on another Donnie Football Friday.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Joe.
See you, buddy. All right, Limits. It's been another wonderful day here at Studio B in Monroeville. Fan weather brought to you by Sun Chevrolet, 24 Silverado 1500, 1.9% financing up to 36 months with approved credit through GM Financial. Full terms and conditions at sunchevy.com. Beautiful day, high of 75 with cloudy skies. What's cooking brought to you by your local Geico rep, Tim Hester.
Thank you, Mr. Hester.
We're at the unofficial halfway point. What's been the most surprising development of this Steelers season to you?
Really, the way that injuries have affected the team in one way or another. Russell Wilson missing the first 6 weeks of the season and giving us that chance to see Justin Fields. Broderick Jones needing to step in at right tackle and the progression, or I guess lack of progression that he's made on the offensive line. Your first round pick, Troy Faltan, who day one starter, not available. And I guess, in let's just say, unavailability. That's not the best way to put it. Not having availability for Cam Sutton as well in the back end, with Beanie Bishop emerging as an undrafted rookie. Basically, injuries and inability to make the field has been the biggest surprise for me, and how other guys have stepped up or not stepped up.
Mine would be the sort of arc of the quarterback situation. If you would have told me before the season, yeah, Justin Fields will come in, they'll go 4-2, and then Tomlin will still make a switch, and it'll be Russell Wilson, and after a slow couple series, he'll be really, really good, and they'll move on from there. I think I would have been surprised. I would have been surprised. I didn't think Russell Wilson was going to miss that many games. And just to have the story kind of play out the way that it did, that's my biggest surprise. How about the biggest disappointment so far?
Broderick Jones. I mean, wish he was the left tackle, but Dan Moore has been playing as their best offensive tackle this year. He might be their best offensive lineman outside of Zach Frazier. So Broderick Jones definitely has not been excited about that. And the other disappointment is Omar Khan not getting a wide receiver. I thought they would have done something by now.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say, is that, and also losing to Dallas at home. That was ridiculous. It really was. Dallas has proven to not be a very good team, I don't think anyway, this year. And that's just, and they were missing Micah Parsons, for God's sakes, Lawrence, other people. That was a bad loss. That was the biggest disappointment so far. But the team overall, I feel like they're right about on schedule where I thought they would be, which is right around 6-2. I think they caught Atlanta at a good time. They caught Denver at a good time. I'm not taking away credit for those wins. I just think that's sometimes the way of it, not only in the NFL, but every sport. It's not who you play, it's when you play them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, makes complete sense. I still think the Colts game, too, is right up there, neck and neck with the Cowboy game. I mean, Joe Flacco comes off the bench and beats you, somebody you're so familiar with, even though Tomlin said they had to adjust to him. That game still is a glaring omission, I think, for me.
Meanwhile, and we'll get to more of that tomorrow, sort of a mid-season report, a full report on the Steelers. This Penguins situation is just sort of mind-blowing, because in any other instance, if you had a team that was coming off two underachieving, disappointing seasons and got off to this kind of start where they're the worst team in their division and their conference so far, and the only team in the whole NHL that's worse than them is the San Jose Sharks, that's a bad place to be. And you've lost six in a row. The coach either would have been fired, or that's all anybody would be talking about, is how long for Mike Sullivan. I know The Athletic, I think, had a thing before the season, first coach fired, and I think Sully was up there, if not first on that list. But I just don't hear people talking about this. And I think in any other market, it would be topic number one with their team. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and the extension that he signed kicks in this season. Like, I just don't think Fenway Sports Group is going to eat 3 years of a contract extension for Mike Sullivan, who they seemingly love. Is it because he's a Boston guy? Is it because of the championships? Who knows? We don't hear from him very often.
Man, I mean, and this is hockey we're talking about. I just think anywhere else, like, today might be the day. 3-7-1 through 11 games. They've played more games than almost anybody in the East, and yet they have the least amount of points. I'm not a mathematician here, but that ain't a great formula. Most games, least points. This is a disaster. They've lost six in a row. And basically, you know, without getting into intricate X's and O's and schemes and all that crap, they don't do what he wants them to do anymore. There may be many reasons for that. The roster that Kyle Dubas has built may be at odds with how Sully wants to play the game. But when you have a situation where your coach is constantly and for years now talking about puck management and you display so much puck mismanagement and he talks about constructing a team that's hard to play against and they're easy to play against. And he talks about a team that wants to be really good defensively and they're horrific defensively. Then at some point, don't you have to say, regardless of the many reasons for this, this team never does what the coach wants them to do. Fire the coach?
Yeah. And I mean, think about, we challenged the goaltender so much on this team, right? Like, whether it be Tristan Jarry, who has gotten a lot of garbage this season,
so
and rightfully so, the play in front of them, Joe, has not been good. Like, they have not played well in front of their goalies. They're giving up. I saw a number, I think, during the losing streak or before this game, they had given up four or more goals in six games in a row. Like, sure, a lot of that is on your goaltending, but the play in front of it has to be significantly better so you're not putting your goalies on an island either.
Well, now they have games coming up against Anaheim and Montreal. And while that may be a good thing, you would think, because Anaheim is a very middling team. And Montreal right now is, what are they, 4-5? I mean, they haven't been good for a while, right? So you have two home games against two, I'll say, bad teams. Well, that could be a get right. What if they lose both of those? If they lose both of those games, let me ask you this question. Would you be shocked if the day after, let's see, November 3rd or so, they announced that Sullivan is fired? I couldn't be shocked, even in this environment where Fenway Sports Group considers him to be a Bill Belichick-like figure. Even though it's a coach-centric organization, and even though, as you mentioned, his 3-year contract extension is just kicking in now. Like, he basically has 3 years left on his deal, two full seasons after this. I can't say I would be shocked. I just couldn't be at 3-9-1, given what's happened the last couple of years when they've underachieved, not made the playoffs, to start like that and to lose 8 games in a row and be the worst team in hockey. Like I said, in other markets, it would be a foregone conclusion that he was gone. I would say I would still be surprised, but I wouldn't be shocked. I would not be shocked if that news that day was that the Penguins have moved on from Mike Sullivan. I can't believe that he would be either.
Yeah, that's the caveat I'd put on it. I would be just a little surprised, not shocked at all, just because of the power that Mike Sullivan has with the Penguins. It doesn't rival Mike Tomlin's power with the Steelers, but I think it's pretty close. Like, Tristan Jarry was his guy. Erik Karlsson making that move, I'm sure Mike Sullivan had a significant amount of input on that. And I think the money, the financial constraints on it, if it was another organization, maybe it's more desperate to change. But it seems like the Penguins are just kind of okay being stuck in the middle, not pushing all of their chips.
They're not stuck in the middle. They're at the bottom of the league.
Yeah, but in terms of the last 2 years being a point or two or a game away from making the playoffs or not making the playoffs. That's the definition of being in the mushy middle and the middle of purgatory. But now the bottom has fallen out. I think they're going to get Sullivan a little bit longer, maybe till the end of the year, and then they'd fire him.
Worst goals against average in all of hockey. Man, is that something to look at? Just to see it on a computer screen here. 11 games played, they're 32nd in goals against at 4.27. Now, the other way to look at this, as I mentioned earlier, is you're in the last place you want to be, but you might be in the place you're going to eventually be anyway, and it might be the first place you want to be, which is down at the bottom of the league. So now that you're there anyway, you know, it'll be like, showing up at somebody's house and staying for a while. And now that you're here, you might as well stay. You want to pay rent? Like, now that you're down at the bottom of the league, should the Penguins just try to augment that? Fast track whatever process they're in here.
I don't think that would be a problem. Say, I wonder if that conversation would be had, though, with Crosby, Malkin, Letang, or if any of those guys would go to management or Sullivan and talk about it, though, and have a discussion.
I don't know, but my point is you're there. You're there now. So would it be the worst thing in the world to start making moves to try to stay there? That's just a question. We'll deal with that tomorrow. We'll deal with a lot of football tomorrow. You're a wonderful man. Thanks to everybody here at Studio B. The quarterback thing from the other day where they protected the quarterback was the Chargers, just for everybody's interest. Good night, Limits.
Good night, Joe.